This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me again this Tuesday. This week, we're going to start off with Radio City Playhouse, an episode from August 30th, 1948, titled Betrayal. And it's a quick Incredible But True with Silent as a Tomb. We'll finish off with Luke Slaughter of Tombstone and The Homesteaders, an episode from March 23rd, 1958.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 9. Radio City Playhouse proudly presents Betrayal, another story by Ernest Canoy, author of Ground Floor Window and Whistle Daughter Whistle. Irv is played by Bernard Grant, and the production is directed by Harry W. Junkin. Here is Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 9, Betrayal.
Streets look a lot different at 4 in the morning than they do in the daylight. I mean, it's quiet, and you can't see the old papers and the orange peel in the gutter. I checked in off my beat about 4. I got rid of the blue straitjacket at the precinct and was heading for that nice, lumpy bed in my room. When I turned off 117th Street, I spotted this kid sitting on a curb leaning against a street lamp. I guess I look funny in civvies, or else he didn't hear me come up, because he jumped about 3 feet.
What do you want?
Nothing. What are you doing here?
Minding my own business.
Oh, fresh kid, ain't you? Where do you live?
I forget.
Ain't it kind of laid out for you?
I got all night.
Well, I haven't. Now quit horsing around. Where do you live?
Why don't you chase yourself around a block and holler fire?
Get up out of there.
Blow, bud.
I said get up.
Hey, let go of my arm, you big crumb. Why don't you pick on somebody your own size?
Come on now, kid. You better get home.
What's it to you?
Look, you don't want to get into trouble.
Go ahead. Call a cop. All I can do is take me downtown and shove me in a children's shelter. That don't bother me none.
Know the whole story, don't you?
Huh?
Never mind. Well, how long do you expect to sit in the gutter?
Look, mister, why don't you leave me alone? I didn't do you nothing.
Well, you just can't sit there. Come on.
Hey, let go. Where are you taking me?
Look, if I'm going to argue with a pint-sized Humphrey Bogart, I'm going to do it over some breakfast. I'm hungry. Another all black. No sugar, Charlie.
Throw one black.
Well, kid, how about it?
How about what?
You. Where do you live? What's your name?
Shiv.
Shiv, huh? You carry one?
Yeah. You can look. It snaps open.
Hey, that's quite a frog sticker.
It's legal. The blade's 1/8 under 4 inches. I measured. That's why they call me Shiv, see? Because of the knife. I got my name on the handle on the other side.
And how about the rest of it? Shiv what?
I forget that, too.
One black, Irv.
Hey, Charlie, you ever see this kid before?
Me? No. You done something?
He's got lockjaw.
Lockjaw? What do you know?
Look, kid. Shiv. I ought to turn you in till they take care of you down at the children's shelter.
I wouldn't tell them nothing either.
All right. Look, I'm crazy, but I'll make a bargain with you. If I put you up tonight, will you go home tomorrow?
Well...
It's that at the children's shelter. You'll be there for a couple of days at least.
You wouldn't pull nothing, would you, mister?
Oh, I'll give you Charlie here as a reference.
Well, okay, it's a deal.
Thanks. Come on.
Oh, wait, mister.
What now?
How about a piece of that pie before we go?
Okay. Hey, Charlie, 2 apple pies a la mode. Okay, inside.
Gee, this ain't bad. You live alone?
Solitary confinement.
Yeah. Hey.
What's the matter?
You got a real icebox in the corner.
It's empty, so relax. Here, you take the couch.
Okay, by me. Boy.
Hey, get off of there with your feet.
What's the matter? My shoes wouldn't hurt nothing.
That couch may have pansies on it, kid, but it don't need no fertilizer. Come on, off with the shoes. Okay, now the other one. Hey, when's the last time you washed your feet?
We went swimming last week down at 100th Street.
Only a week ago, huh?
Well, we unscrewed a hydrant last night. Should have seen it. Looked like Niagara Falls or something. I didn't take my shoes off.
Yeah, I'll bet. They look like they grew there.
Boy, guess I am tired.
How about breaking down, Shiv? What were you doing on dawn patrol down there?
It's my old man. If I don't get home by 10, he slams me with his belt. Figure it's better to stay away.
It wouldn't occur to you to get in before 10, huh?
That early? The gang's just starting. Some of the guys don't go home all night.
And what keeps them that busy?
Ah, you know. All sorts of stuff. Depends. Last night we were supposed to have a war. The Panthers, that's us, against the gang from the Bronx. We would have licked them hard.
You got beat.
Nah, some lame brain cop showed up blowing his brains out on a whistle. By the time we quit running, we couldn't find him again.
Spoil the fun, huh?
Sure. We had it all fixed.
Uh-huh.
Guys up on the roof with light bulbs, air guns, everything. We would have murdered him.
And suppose somebody gets hurt?
So they get hurt. Shorty had 4 stitches last week. He's a leader.
The Bronx gang get him?
Yeah. Shorty was walking along, see, when he sees his kid from the Bronx all alone. It's a little kid. So Shorty jumps him.
So naturally.
Only them Bronx rats are hiding around the corner and boom, they're all over Shorty. That's the kind of dirty fighters they are.
Filthy.
They would have carved Shorty up good, only a cop came along and chased him. That was the first time he was ever glad to see a flatfoot.
You, don't like flatfeet.
You kidding? I never seen a cop yet who wasn't yellow cleared down to the sidewalk.
Uh-huh.
All the time breaking up stickball. They never let anybody have any fun. Bunch of cross-eyed crumbs. I wouldn't trust a cop as far as I could throw a hippopotamus. Anyhow, what are you doing sticking up for him?
Why shouldn't I?
You think a guy like you would want to steer clean of the cops.
What?
You don't have to worry about me. I won't say nothing.
Wait a minute. What are you talking about?
I seen it when we come in the room.
Seen what?
Well, I figure nobody wants to get chummy with the cops when he packs a rod in his coat pocket.
A rod? You...
What's the matter with you?
You thought I was, Come here, Shiv.
What is it?
Take a good look in the closet.
Holy smokes.
One suit, blue serge, complete with brass buttons and badge.
A cop?
Commonly known as New York's finest.
Shorty finds out I stayed with a cop, he'll take me apart.
I won't tell him if you don't.
They'll kill me, that's what. It'll be murder.
Well, the kid finally scared himself to sleep. I guess he kind of felt like the lamb that lay down with the lion. Oh, I get plenty tired protecting the taxpayers for 8 hours, so it didn't take me long to fall asleep. I was dreaming of sidewalks made out of foam rubber when a shaft of light from the window hit my eye. I woke up just in time. Where you going, kid?
Just out.
All right, kid, put it back.
Huh?
The watch, put it back.
What do you mean? What one?
Mine. It's in your pocket. Do you put it back or take your pants apart?
I wasn't going nowhere with it.
Just stepping out in the hall to see what time it is.
Oh, yeah, the light's better out there.
Oh, kid, you got enough brass to coat a 4-poster bed. Hand it over.
I was going to bring it back. Here. It's a cheap watch anyway.
I'm sorry. Next time I'll have it gold-plated. What'd you want to do that for anyway? I ought to take you in.
I just wanted to show it to Shorty and the rest of the guys. None of the Panthers ever swiped a cop's watch before.
Yeah, they're slipping.
I'd have brought it back, like I said. Just wanted to show it around. Gee, I wouldn't swipe nothing from you. You've been okay for a cop.
Shiv left the watch and beat it out the door like someone was chasing him. I looked in the closet to see if he lifted the badge off my spare blouse for a souvenir. Everything seemed to be there, so I went back to bed. That night before I went out on the beat, I stopped by the desk man, Sergeant Gold. He's kind of a stubby guy with gray hair. He looks like he might have pulled in Henry Hudson's sailors for disturbing the peace.
Another day, another dollar.
What do you mean, day?
All right, night. What's the matter? You got trouble?
Sure, all the time. If it ain't a crap game up an alley, it's pulling a drunk out of a doorway before he freezes stiff. You can have the 8-4.
I did, when it was 4 hours longer.
Yeah, I know. You was in the force and they wore stand-up collars.
23rd precinct.
What's eating you?
Ah, nothing. Maybe that kid I picked up last night.
Kid? You didn't bring in no kid.
I put him on my couch for the night. He'd make a clam of conversational.
What's his name?
I don't know. He calls himself Shiv because he carries one big enough to slice steak off an elephant.
Wait a minute. Is he a small kid that looks like an underdone weasel with long hair in his eyes?
I would have said an alley cat.
Yeah, well, his old man gets hauled in here about once a month on a drunken disorderly. Name's Walter or Walters or something. I could look it up. The kid comes down to pay his fine.
Yeah, that figures. Well, so long. I gotta go out and protect the taxpayers. I checked out and started wearing my arches down on the concrete. Not much doing. Pull an old lady out from under a cab and shift her off to Lincoln Hospital. Broke up a fight in Broadway. And about 11 o'clock, I turned down 120th Street. There was a bunch of kids sitting on a stoop, and I spotted Shiv on the top step and started over. I just wanted to find out if he got home all right, but somebody let out a yell.
Hey, it's a cop!
As far as I could see, they melted into the ground. About a half an hour later, I was passing that little alley next to the First National Bank.
Hey.
What the devil?
It's me, Shiv.
What do you want?
I wanted to explain about before. Thought you might be sore or something.
About what?
About me calling Chicky on you and running.
Oh, I figured it was you. What was that, the Panthers' general staff?
Sort of.
You sure looked guilty of something. What was up?
Nothing. I was afraid you was coming over to talk to me.
Ah. Well, what do I owe the pleasure of this to?
I only wanted you shouldn't get sore. Won't have to get funny about it.
All right, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, I gotta get going again. You wanna walk with me?
Yeah. No, I can't.
The Panthers?
They wouldn't trust me none if they saw us. You understand that doesn't mean I don't want to.
Okay, Shiv, see you around.
Sure, Irv.
Irv? Where'd you pick that up?
I seen it on the back of your watch.
It got to be kind of a habit. Shiv would wait in the alley and walk a couple of blocks with me. Only the kid was careful never to get seen under a streetlight. He was still afraid of being caught trading with the enemy or something. Once we was talking baseball or something, and Shiv must have forgot because we came around a corner onto Broadway. And across the street, the whole path of General Headquarters was spread over the stoop of 3427. They must have spotted us because the first thing I know, Shiv is holding onto my arm, hollering.
Let go of me, cop! I didn't do nothing! Let go, you flatfoot!
I wasn't even touching him, but he broke away from me like as if I had a death grip on him. He waited for me outside the precinct station that night.
Hey. Hey, Irv.
Houdini, the escape artist.
Oh, I didn't mean nothing.
Did it go over big with the Panthers?
It wasn't sore or nothing, was
it? No. There's nothing I like better than being called a crumb. Unless it's a brass monkey.
That ain't nothing.
Practically a compliment.
Take it easy, will you? I only said that because the Panthers seen me. Like yelling kill the umpire or something.
Okay, we'll let the whole thing drop. You hungry?
Yeah, sure.
Well, come on. What's the matter? You're out late again.
The old man's on another bat. Figure I ain't gonna walk in on him and have him think I'm a snake.
Is he working?
On and off. He ain't had nothing to eat in the house for a couple of days.
Yeah, how about you?
I do okay. You know, snitching stuff off the grocery store.
Hey, you better not let me catch you lifting anything.
You wouldn't turn me in, would you?
I'm serious, Shiv. If you need money, you come to me, see?
Well, I don't do it no more. I've been going up to my auntie's. Only she cooks like a cement mixer.
You stay at your aunt's, see? I don't like that sticky finger stuff.
Take it easy, Irv. I didn't take nothing big. Besides, I don't have to take that from you.
What?
Well, I mean, we're just friends or something, see? When you start handing me big-time advice, it spoils everything, like you was a teacher or a relative.
Okay, if you want it that way.
And besides, just because I figure one cop ain't so bad, it don't mean the rest of them ain't no good low-down crumbs.
Sounds like a communique from the Panthers.
Shorty made me a lieutenant.
A commissioned officer, huh? Congratulations.
They only got two of them, me and Bernie.
Okay, Lieutenant, here's Charlie's place. Unless you got scruples against eating with the enlisted men. That's the way it was. The kid sort of tolerated me like I was his personal exception to the general rule about cops. After that, I couldn't get nothing off him. About what he did in the daytime, I mean. I guess he went to his aunt's for meals. I never asked him. Once I tried to talk him out of the Panthers.
Why don't you go dive in a sewer? You think I'm one of them milk-fed petunias that runs home to mama after school? Look, I don't ask you to quit the cops, so you lay off the Panthers.
So, I did. After that, the kid was even more careful, in case, perish forbid, anybody should see him with me. Once I offered to take him to the polo grounds when the Dodgers were in.
You mean it? For the doubleheader?
Sure, I'm a hot sport.
I sneaked in last year to the stadium. There's a place around by the police.
Not anymore. They fenced that one in.
Aw, the dirty crumbs.
Money man. They got a quaint idea you should pay to get in.
Not me. It's against my principles.
Yeah, I figured. Well, you want to go?
Sure.
Okay, I'll pick you up at the 8th Avenue subway, 116th Street. Well, what are you shaking your head for?
Look, suppose I meet you up there on top of the bluff.
Okay. Far be it for me to damage your social standing. The top of Coogan's Bluff it is. I'll be wearing a white carnation in my buttonhole. Just whistle twice and give the password. Then for a while, I didn't see the kid. I got to looking for him in doorways, down alleys. I even checked the children's shelter downtown and the juvenile court. I didn't hear anything about him until one night when I came in off my hitch to sign out. It was pouring down, sheets of rain. I was sweating under the heavy raincoat and hood. I just got it off and started to stretch when Sergeant Gold called me over.
Hey, are you? Come here a minute, will you?
Sure, Sergeant. Hey, how do you get a desk job on a night like this?
Never mind. Did you hear we had a warehouse cracked on 135th Street?
Yeah?
Karen spotted him and got himself shot in the leg.
Hey, that's tough. How is he?
Well, he's in Lincoln Hospital. He'll be all right. That ain't what I called you over for. They found this in the warehouse alley.
A knife, huh?
It's got writing on the handle, Irv.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. You want me to bring him in?
Figured you'd know where to find him.
Anything else?
You don't mind. I mean, I could send somebody else.
That's all right, Sergeant. I'll bring the kid in. I stood outside the station, watching the rain driving against the green lights. I didn't know where to find that crazy little jerk. Wasn't anybody much on the streets. A couple of cabs come by. Once in a while, somebody under an umbrella. I went over to the house where the kid lived. The landlady was scared, trembling when she saw me outside, and she let me in the room with a passkey. The kid's old man was lying across a cot, colder than a dead fish, with a whiskey smell strong enough to walk on. I poked it with my nightstick.
Mm-hmm.
And he just muttered.
Come on, come, Peter, come on.
Hey, come on, come to.
Go away, I'm sleeping.
You're stiff. Come on, sit up.
Hey, what's the idea?
Stay up.
The idea, hey, what is this? You a cop?
Yeah.
What do you want? I ain't done nothing.
Where's the kid?
Huh?
The kid.
What kid?
For crying out loud, your kid, Shiv.
Him, I don't know. Go away.
Stay up there, come on.
Quit shaking me, will you?
Where is he?
Told you, I don't know. What do you want him for?
Oh, never mind.
Ain't surprised. That kid's no good. No respect for his father, see? All the kids are no good.
You don't know where he is?
Whole generation no good. Oh. See, in trouble, I'll beat the ears off him, little no good devil.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I'll tear him apart. No respect for his father.
You're sure you don't know where he is?
Told you, I don't know. And I don't care if he never shows up. The pain in the neck. Go on, let me alone. I'm going to sleep, see? Beat it.
I told the landlady to call the station if he showed up. It was beginning to show daylight when I got back on the street. I called into Sergeant Gold and went home. My feet hurt more than usual, and I guess I felt pretty rotten. I just about made it up to the stairs of my room and opened the door. Huh? How did you get in here?
That lock wouldn't stop a campfire, girl.
What'd you come here for?
I just ain't seen you for a while, that's all.
Yeah, I'll bet.
How you been?
Why don't you cut it out?
What's the matter, Ken? A guy ask how you been?
Shiv, I saw your knife tonight, that one with your name on the handle.
You did? That's funny. I lost it a week ago. That's right. It dropped right out of my pocket.
They found that knife in a warehouse alley, Shiv. Right next to where a cop got shot.
I lost it playing stickball. That's it.
Oh, cut it out. It was the Panthers, wasn't it? They got pretty big. Decided to quit snitching bananas off of fruit stands. Graduated to a warehouse job, didn't they?
Listen, Irv. I didn't want to go see. But I was a lieutenant. They would have said I was... I didn't want to go see.
Who had the gun? Who did the shoot?
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
Remember, Irv, you told me to come to you when I was in trouble. You remember?
Yeah.
That's why I come. Irv, I only got one friend anywhere. That's why I come to you.
Wait a minute.
I gotta get out of town, Irv, before they find out. I gotta have some money. I'll pay you back. Honest, I will. I'll get a job somewhere. Lots of places hire kids.
Hold on, Shiv.
You're gonna let me to the door, aren't you, Irv? Like you always said, if I needed anything...
You shouldn't have come here, Shiv.
I couldn't have gone home, Irv. The old man would have beat me up with an empty bottle, and my Aunt Myra would have just prayed at me. I knew you'd help me, Irv. You got to.
You shouldn't have come.
You're gonna give me the dough, ain't you? Ain't you, Irv? Irv!
I'm gonna take you in, Shiv.
No.
I got to. Besides, if I don't, somebody else will. You see that, don't you, kid? It's the only way, Shiv.
Let go of my arm.
I got to.
I should have known.
Listen to me, Shiv.
Let go, I said, you low-down, stinking, good-for-nothing cop. I should have known you cheap, crummy, no-good double-crosser.
Shiv!
What kind of a friend? Come to him for help and right away he squeals. What are they going to make you for this, an inspector or something?
Calm down, will you?
Let me tell you, I won't make the same mistake again. There ain't no cop living who ain't rotten right down through. I'll bet they make you a commissioner or something.
You shut up a while and listen.
I
said listen! Maybe you think I like pulling you in for the juvenile court.
Supposed to be a friend.
Sure, a friend. What do you think my job is? You think I get paid for nothing? I'm supposed to see that nobody gets hurt in my beat. I'm supposed to pull people out of fights and make sure nobody gets mugged in the alleys. I gotta see that nobody cleans out a store when nobody's looking.
You're breaking my heart.
You think it's easy being a cop? It's a job like anything else and ain't such a good paying one at that. But kid, it's the only job I got and I gotta do it right. Maybe it's crazy, but that's the way I work.
If I had maybe $1,000...
No, Shiv. No. You come a lot closer to making me forget the job than a cheap hood with a roll of dough. But I wouldn't do different if you were my own kid brother. You gotta go in. Can't you understand that?
Cop, that's all. Once a cop, always a low-down heel.
And that gang. Next time the Panthers pull a job, maybe somebody will shoot straighter. There'll be a first-degree charge, and by that time, maybe you'll be old enough so you can get up in a regular court. What the devil kind of life is that? Can't you understand?
Understand. I understand, all right. I thought there was one decent cop, a guy who'd stick by a friend, but... I was a sucker, see? I was wrong. I hope that flatfoot that got shot dies. I hope he dies, and I wish it was you.
I went down a couple of days later to see the kid at the children's shelter. He was out playing basketball with a slew of kids in for everything from truancy to armed robbery. I get in to see the social worker, and she talked to me a long time about Shiv, only she called him Burton. Then they brought the kid into the office and left me alone with him. He just stood there a long time without saying anything. And finally he got curious.
Well, what do you want?
I just come to see how you were.
I'm fine, just dandy, so you can go.
They caught Shorty and the rest of the Panthers. Most of them are in the Center Street jail.
So?
Look, kid, do you need anything? I mean, a toothbrush or something?
Nah, thanks.
They treat you all right?
Yeah, I guess so. A lot of questions.
Look, the social worker told me you'd be up before Judge Carroll. Now, that's the lady judge. I'll have to be there too, see? So between us, maybe it'll be all right.
Don't do me no favors.
Oh, what do you want to be so tough? Sometimes you get me so mad, I could... You sure you don't need anything?
I'll make out.
Okay, then. Goodbye. Shake? No? Okay. So long. Yeah?
Look. A kid in the yard. He told me. I mean, where they gonna send me? They gonna keep me there all the time?
Oh, no, not too long, I guess.
This kid said they throw away the key, see? He told me they beat the ears off you all the time. Would they do that, huh? The kid, he'd been up before. He told me that... I don't want to stay there all the time,
Oh, hey, take it easy. It ain't that bad. I've seen it up there.
I wouldn't tell nobody else. I'm scared, Irv. What are they going to do to me?
You'll be okay, Shiv. You'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I guess I can take it.
I gotta go, kid.
Yeah. Irv.
Yeah.
You can... I mean, if you want, you can write me a letter.
Oh, sure, Shiv. We'll make a lot of plans for later. I mean, for after.
Yeah, I know. Only, don't give the police station for a return address.
No?
I wouldn't want the other guys to know I was getting letters from a cop.
That's how it is. Shiv is upstate at the state school. He writes to me about once a month. Grubby, tough letters. And I send him stuff. The other day, Sergeant Gold called me over to the desk at the station.
Hey, Irv.
Yeah?
I got a check here for you.
A check?
It's a reward from the insurance company. For catching a warehouse thief.
Oh.
$100.
$100.
Don't you want it?
You know what I feel like, Sarge? Judas. That's what. Judas.
You gonna cash it?
No. Oh, yeah. I'll keep it for Shiv. $100 is $100. Even if it is blood money.
You have just heard Betrayal, as written by Ernest Kenoy and directed by Harry W. Junkin. The part of Irv was played by Bernard Grant. Shiv was Edwin Bruce, age 12. Other players included Arthur Q. Bryan and Alan Stevenson. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. Radio City Playhouse is supervised for the National Broadcasting Company by Richard P. McDonough. Next week, the story of Michael and Margaret, the story of their dreams and their love, entitled King of the Moon by Joseph Shuell. We warmly invite you to join us next Monday for Attraction 10, King of the Moon, on Radio City Playhouse. Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The thing happened on an autumn afternoon in the city of Norfolk, Virginia. And to try to explain it, you must know also of the incident that occurred on that same afternoon in another city more than 3,000 miles away. But in all the years that have passed since that particular afternoon, no one, neither scientist nor spiritualist, pretends to understand it.
It was in a movie house that the thing happened, in the Lowe's State Theater in Norfolk.
and the day was September 15th, 1930. The talkies were little more than a toy then. Travelogues had been made, and Vitaphone shorts, of course, but the day of full-length features had only just dawned. Hence, as the feature began, the audience leaned forward in their seats with eager anticipation. And on the screen flashed the name of the film and the credits. The Sea Wolf, adapted from the novel by Jack London, starring Milton Sills. Up in their box at the rear of the theater, the operator and George's assistant sat side by side, their eyes on the screen below, anticipating an hour or so of pure enjoyment, their ears tuned to the smooth, familiar automatic click of the projector. But they were doomed to disappointment, for something unforeseen was taking place.
It's the soundtrack, George. Something must be wrong with it.
No, neither words nor music were audible in the theater. Already the audience was beginning to express its annoyance. The operator and his assistant worked feverishly over the sound unit, examined every possible source of trouble. And after 5 minutes, the operator shook his head in perplexity.
I can't find it, George. I give up. Let's haul out the emergency unit.
So they flashed a placard on the screen requesting the audience to be patient. And then they connected the emergency sound unit and started the film from the beginning. Once again, the spectators grew quiet. But within an instant, both men were on their feet.
George, there's still no sound. The emergency unit doesn't work either.
3.5 hours later, the two men were still bent over the sound equipment. The patrons had long since filed out of the theater. And if they had not finally given up hope, the operator and his assistant might still be there. For neither they nor anyone else was ever able to determine the mechanical cause of the trouble. And then, on the following afternoon, when the men went back on duty, both were wondering whether the cause was mechanical, for both had seen the morning papers.
You read about it then, huh, George? It couldn't have had anything to do with that soundtrack, could it? But if it didn't, it's the craziest coincidence I ever heard of. Two sound units go on the blink for no reason at all. And at the same time, on the same afternoon, Milton Sills, the star of the movie, dies.
Yes, on the afternoon of September 15th, 1930, the career of the illustrious Milton Sills came to an end. As the audience in a theater in Norfolk, Virginia, walked away, bitterly disappointed because they had failed to hear the star's voice, the star himself lay on his deathbed in Hollywood, California. Hard as it may be to believe that there could be a real connection between the two events, it is still harder to believe that it was mere coincidence. Whatever the explanation, the fact remains that the incidents did occur simultaneously, and that in itself is a fact. Incredible, but true.
Slaughter's my name, Luke Slaughter. Cattle's my business. It's a tough business. It's big business. I've got a big stake in it. And there's no man west of the Rio Grande big enough to take it from me.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, Civil War cavalryman turned Arizona cattleman. Across the territory, from Yuma to Fort Defiance, from Flagstaff to the Huachucas and below the border through Chihuahua and Sonora, his name was respected or feared, depending on which side of the law you were on. Man of vision, man of legend, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone. Get used to all kinds of people in Tombstone. Miners from above and below the border. Cowboys, legitimate and illegitimate. Chinese who cook your meals or your shirts. All kinds. But one afternoon, Wichita and I spotted a new brand.
Say, will you look at that dude with the white hair and goatee? If he ain't the high mucky muck of something, I miss my guess.
Looks more to me like a traveling preacher.
Yeah, but the other ain't no deacon from his looks.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
I wonder if you could give us a direction, sir. I'm not too familiar in these parts, and let me introduce myself. I'm Colonel Everett. This is my business associate, Mr. Granby.
Howdy.
Howdy. Slaughter's my name. This is Wichita.
Howdy.
What is it you're looking for, Colonel?
Well, we're heading for the Meeker place. I believe it's just outside of Tombstone somewhere.
That's right. Cal Meeker spreads about 3 miles north. The Lazy M. You can't miss it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your courtesy, sir.
Not at all. Oh, Mr. Granby.
Yeah?
Haven't we met somewhere before?
Met? No, I don't guess so, mister. It's the first time I've ever been in Arizona.
Well, now, I haven't spent all my life here either. I'd swear we'd met someplace.
Well, thank you for the directions, Mr. Slaughter. We'll get along to Lazy M. Come on, Granby. So, that's the way of it, Mr. Meeker. I'm sorry.
Now, wait a minute, Colonel Everett. This is my land. I homesteaded it. Got my title straight from the government.
You don't listen very good, Meeker. The colonel told you he's got the original grant on this land, dated way back in 52, before you ever saw Arizona. That's right, sir. My title's all official and registered.
But Mexico sold this land to the U.S. in 53.
And the United States honored all prior claims. Right so, Granby. Now, I am ordering you to get off my property in 2 days, Meeker. And I'm giving you a choice.
A choice?
Drive your cattle off this spread within 2 days, or leave them, and I'll give you $5 a head for them.
$5? Why, that's robbery. And what if I refuse?
Then we'll have to drive them off ourselves. That's your choice.
Choice? Get off my ranch and stay off, both of you.
Put away that gun, Meeker.
Get going, I said. Get going or
Granby.
I'll...
Granby!
Okay, Colonel.
Get back or I'll shoot.
Oh, no, you won't. Oh, drop the gun. Oh, drop it. You might hurt somebody.
He don't think we mean business, Granby. Show him. Yeah, that'll give you a rough idea, Meeker. I'd suggest you start moving off this land now. We're taking over day after tomorrow.
Now, Cal, let me get this straight. The colonel claims he has an old Mexican grant to your land?
That's right, Luke. Signed by Santa Ana himself, he said. And not just my spread, either. He claims all the land out my way.
Hmm. Wonder why he'd wait all these years to claim it.
Golly. Well, ain't there something you can do, Luke?
I don't know. It's a fact the government did recognize prior claims when they bought this territory from Mexico. So if his grant's on the level...
You know this would ruin me. All of us up there, Luke.
I know. Where's this colonel located?
He told me he's got a land office in Bisbee.
All right, then. Wichita, you and I'll take a little ride down to Bisbee to see what we can find out. And you, Cal,
yeah, Luke.
Go back to your spread and don't do anything until you hear from me. This may all be on the level, but every time I think of that business associate of the colonel's, I wonder.
Hey, there's the place, Luke. See the shingle?
Yeah. Land office, Colonel Justin Everett.
Real pretty name.
Seems to me that shack was vacant a month ago. You wait here, Wichita. I won't be long.
Right, Luke.
Yes, sir. What can I... Well, we meet again. Mr. Slaughter, isn't it?
That's right, Colonel.
Well, what brings you down to Bisbee, sir? In the market for some land?
Like the Lazy M Ranch?
Well, now that tract won't be available for a couple of days, but we can talk about it now.
Yeah, I think now's the best time to talk about it. Cal Meeker's a friend of mine, Colonel, and a member of the Cattlemen's Association. He tells me you're laying claim to his spread.
Yes, yes, that's correct, sir.
Suppose you tell me all about it.
Well, I don't know why I should, Mr. Slaughter. This is a private matter between Meeker and me.
I'm the head of the Cattlemen's Association up at Tombstone. Anything that affects the members interests me. Now, let's hear about it.
Well, all very simple, sir. I hold a permanent grant on the land up there, signed by Santa Anna himself. It was a gift of my father, sir, who did some favors.
That land is United States territory now.
I'm aware of that.
You've had your claim certified?
Of course I have. The document's been verified and declared legal by your own Judge Harris in Tombstone.
Oh? When?
Not more than a month ago.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to take a look at that paper, too, if you don't mind.
I do mind, sir. This is none of your business.
I just got back from Tombstone, Colonel. The judge said... Slaughter... What are you doing here?
El Paso. You ever live in El Paso, Granby?
You still trying to make out you know me? No, I never lived in El Paso.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I must be mistaken. Thanks for the information, Colonel.
Information?
Yeah.
You sure you never got fouled up with that man, Granby? Because if you did, and he remembered...
I swear, Colonel, I never saw him before in my life.
All right. I just hope he never saw you.
Yes?
Morning, Judge.
Well, Luke Slaughter... What can I do for you?
Oh, nothing special. Just dropped by for a chat.
Come in. Come in.
Thank you. You know, I haven't talked to you since you lived in that little house up on Safford Street. It's quite a fancy layout you've got now.
Well, thanks, Laura. I like it.
I don't see how you can swing it on a judge's salary.
Oh, well, you see, a relative of mine died in Kansas City. Left me some money. Yes, sir, quite a lot of money.
Oh. When'd you buy this place?
Why, it was just a month ago, next Monday.
I see. Judge, I wonder if you could give me a little information on a land deal.
What kind of land deal?
Well, a fellow named Everett, Colonel Everett, claims he has a Mexican grant on a lot of property around here.
Oh, Colonel Everett, yes. Say, that was a surprise to me, too. Yes, sir, quite a surprise. I had no idea such a grant existed.
He tells me you certified the title. Is that right?
Oh, yes, yes. I went into it very thoroughly. Studied the grant, checked Santa Anna's signature, and didn't leave a stone unturned. No, sir, not a stone.
Well, I certainly hope so, Judge. I wouldn't want to see you mixed up in a crooked deal.
Crooked? Why, what do you mean by that?
Well, I haven't seen the grant myself, but... Well, somehow it's got an unpleasant smell to it. For your own good... You better have another look at that paper.
Now, Slaughter, if you question my integrity...
I never have, Judge, and I'm sure I won't have to now. You know, it's quite a coincidence. That relative of yours dying in Kansas City exactly the same time Colonel Everett came to Arizona.
Now, see here, sir...
Just a coincidence, I'm sure, Judge.
That's it, boys. Get those cattle moving and keep moving till they're clear off the place. Hey! Hey, what is this? What are you doing with my cattle, Granby?
Well, I figured you'd be showing up, Meeker.
Stop those men. They can't drive my herd off like that.
They won't. You want to take the colonel's offer of $5 a head.
This is my ranch, and these are my cattle.
They may be your cattle, but this is no longer your ranch. All right, keep moving, boys. Come on, keep moving!
moment, Luke Slaughter of Tombstone returns. Last September, Carmen Basilio defeated Sugar Ray Robinson for the World Middleweight Championship. Tuesday night in Chicago, they'll meet for the return match, and you'll hear the broadcast only on CBS Radio. Right at ringside will be Jack Drees, giving you a blow-by-blow account of the fight. Dr. Joyce Brothers, the young psychologist from Brooklyn, who set the nation on its ear with her amazing knowledge of boxing, will provide the between rounds commentary. Join us on most of these stations Tuesday night as CBS Radio broadcasts exclusive the exciting rematch between Carmen Basilio and Sugar Ray Robinson. And now, Act Two of William N. Robeson's production of Luke Slaughter of Tombstone.
Hey, Luke. You gotta come help me.
Well, sure, Cal. What's the trouble?
That Colonel Everett.
Well, what about him?
His men are driving my cattle off.
How many men has he got, Cal?
Granby and three others. They're driving my herd toward the East Line.
All right. Keep your shirt on. We'll get your herd back if we have to make the Colonel drive them back himself.
Driving them right down that arroyo.
Pull up here.
They'll be scattered all over the territory. I'll lose half my herd.
Forget the cattle. We'll get the men first. Cal, you ride around that butte and come in on them from the other side when I signal you.
All right, Luke.
All right, Wichita. We'll move in from this side.
Yeah, I'm right with you, Luke.
Hold it. It's close enough.
There. If this is the Colonel's land, we're the ones breaking the law.
First things first. We'll worry about the law later.
Look, there's Cal waiting for your signal.
All right, then. Here we go. So that's the way he wants it.
I got one of them, but he's sticking on his horse.
Oh, it's a fire. They're making a break for it.
Yeah, I guess they ain't wanting any more of it, Luke.
Looks that way. Think you and Cal can get the herd back on the Lazy M, all right, Wichita?
Why, sure we can, but where are you going?
I'm making a fast trip to Bisbee. Now I know the Colonel's playing for keeps. It's time for a showdown.
Hey, Colonel.
Don't bother me, Granby. I'm figuring.
Slaughter's out front.
Slaughter? You didn't waste any time getting down from Tombstone.
Hello, Colonel.
You Granby. Got your nerve coming in here, Slaughter. You wounded one of my men when he was doing his legal duty.
Legal duty? He was a rustler.
What do you want?
Well, I figured maybe we could stop any further violence around here if I had a look at that grant of yours.
Get out of here, Slaughter.
Tell your friend to keep his hand away from his holster, Colonel. You don't want your office messed up, do you? Tell him.
He's got a right to defend himself.
Yeah, sure he has. Go ahead, Granby. Defend yourself. Go ahead. Draw. I thought so. Now, Colonel, the deed.
I don't have to show it to you, Slaughter.
That's right. But you're going to.
There. You're so curious. Have a look.
Pretty document. Mighty fancy engraving.
Just as legal as it is pretty. Might help if you could read Spanish.
Well, it just so happens I can. Dated September 11th, 1852. Signed by... Say, this fellow really took a liking to himself, didn't he?
His Most Serene Highness Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna, perpetual dictator of Mexico.
You'll notice the grant is perpetual, too.
I noticed that. Hope it's more perpetual than Santa Anna was. Yes, sir. That's mighty pretty engraving.
Well, you're satisfied, Slaughter?
Yes, indeed I am. I've seen all I need to, for now. And now that I've seen it, Colonel, I'm sure our next meeting will be under much different circumstances.
Well, I certainly hope so, sir.
Good day, gentlemen.
Slaughter, you must be out of your mind demanding I issue an order for the arrest of Colonel Everett and Mr. Granby.
I repeat, Judge. I want them brought up from Bisbee and held without bail. Oh, and by the way, be sure and subpoena that deed of the Colonel's.
But I can't issue an order for their arrest. There's no charge against them.
Listen, Judge, I guess I've read as much law as you have. You want charges? I'll give you a few. Fraud, intimidation, cattle rustling. You want any more? I'll sign the complaint.
But you don't understand, Slaughter. You'd have to have evidence.
I'll produce the evidence at the proper time, in court.
I can't do it. No, sir, I just can't.
Maybe you'd rather be a defendant in this case, Judge.
You better be able to prove your charges in court.
You'd be surprised what I can prove. See you in court, Judge.
Court will come to order. Luke Slaughter, being the complaining party in behalf of the Cattlemen's Association, he gets first say. Go ahead, Slaughter.
Give it to him good, Counselor.
Quiet, Wichita. Thank you, Judge. Now, these men are being tried on a charge of fraud. We'll forget a few other charges.
This is preposterous. He can't prove a thing. The judge knows that.
Could we have a little order in the court, Your Honor? Thank you. Now, if it please the court, I have in my hand the Mexican land grant by which Colonel Everett's claiming land around here. If it wasn't for just two things, he'd be in his rights. First of all, this grant is dated September 1st, 1852. That date looked kind of odd to me some way, so I looked it up. Now, it just happens that in September of 52, Santa Anna, who was supposed to have signed this deed, was in exile in South America. He didn't become president of Mexico until more than 6 months later, April 15th, 1853. So he couldn't very well give away land when he wasn't even in office, could he?
Order! Order!
Now, that's one thing. There's another. The first day I saw Colonel Everett's business associate, Mr. Granby, I had a feeling I'd met him someplace before. The thought kept nagging at me. Then when I saw this document, I put two and two together and the whole thing came to me. I was wrong. I hadn't met Mr. Granby at all. I'd just seen his picture a while back on the wall of a marshal's office back in Abilene, Texas.
What? Why, you...
It's no wonder this document looks so pretty. Mr. Granby is an expert at making things like this. He's wanted by the United States government for forgery and counterfeiting.
That's a lie!
Now, there's one more way I'm going to prove this case. By Judge Harris himself. The judge can tell you a few things about these men that'll prove their guilt. Can't you, Judge?
Well, when the Colonel and Mr. Granby first approached me...
I'll teach you to keep your mouth shut, Harris.
Luke, Granby's got a deputy's gun.
Get down behind that desk, Judge.
Keep away from me, Slaughter.
I'll fix you so's everybody will keep away from you.
Now!
See, he doesn't get away again. All right. Come on out, Judge. Let's have some order here.
Yes. Yes, all right.
I don't think we need to carry this farce any further. Judge, you ready to make your decision?
Yes, yes. I find these two men guilty as charged. They will be brought to this court tomorrow morning for sentencing. This court is adjourned.
Well, say, that was real nice work, Luke. Why, you saved the judge's life.
Yeah, I guess I did. You go ahead, Wichita. I'll be along in a minute.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I guess that takes care of everything, Slaughter.
Almost. It's just one thing more. How soon are you leaving town, Judge?
What? Why, I'm not leaving.
I say you are. We like our courts to be honest around here. I'm afraid you don't quite fit the bill.
Yeah, I guess I did make a mistake, Slaughter.
Maybe you can profit by it in the next place you go. There's a stage out of here tomorrow afternoon. See that you're on it. So long, Judge. Good luck.
Luke Slaughter of Tombstone, starring Sam Buffington, was written by Don Clark, with editorial supervision by Tom Hanley, and directed by William N. Robeson. Supporting Mr. Buffington were John McIntyre, Jim McCallion, Bill Quinn, Junius Matthews, and Ed Jerome. Music composed by Wilbur Hatch and conducted by Amerigo Marino. Next week at this time, we return with...
Slaughter's the name. Luke Slaughter. When we meet up again, you can call me that. Luke Slaughter.
Butcher, baker, candlestick maker, lawyer, bricklayer. No matter what your work is, the course of American business from day to day affects you in 100 ways. Beginning tomorrow and right through the week, follow our business news reports on most of these stations with Walter Cronkite and Bill Downs doing the reporting. Now stay tuned for Frontier Gentlemen, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. This is the CBS Radio Network.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections this time. If you're in the mood for more old-time radio, visit RelicRadio.com. You'll find all the podcasts listed there and links to everything else Relic Radio. Also, a donate button. If you'd like to help support Relic Radio, click on the big red Support Relic Radio button. It'll take you to the donations page with a couple of options there. Thanks to everyone who has donated. I appreciate it very much. That's going to do it for this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with another hour of old-time radio on the Relic Radio Show.